Existence of God, and we'll get into the reliability of the Bible. As I get into that, I may break that up into two classes, and then in this about Jesus into two classes. We'll see how all that works out. So you'll find out next week what the plan is for all that. But last week we looked at some of the common arguments people use to try to say that God doesn't exist. What were some of those arguments?
How can a God let bad things happen?
Yeah, how can a loving God let bad things happen? So I'm an atheist. What's another one that we talked about?
Like, it's wrong to say that everything, like, there's an absolute right.
Yeah, we talked about, yeah, some of the logic kind of things that people try to use. What else?
Christians are
Yeah, the hypocritical Christians and how those people like discredit God and Christianity and things like that. So, like, the basic approach that we had last week was in every argument people use to not believe in God, there's some kind of faith assumption built within that. So, you have to help people learn how to doubt their own doubts. So, there's some kind of faith involved with saying that how could a good and loving God allow evil and suffering? Like, you're making assumptions that have to be peeled open. So in this class, though, blah, 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 we know this stuff. What I want to do in this class is operate from the perspective that the existence of God is a theory. What is a theory?
Something that hasn't been totally proven.
Yeah, it's not been totally proven, but the theory is like the best operating explanation for the phenomena that we see, right? So, like, gravity. Like, we've got theories on what gravity is and how it works, but it's not been, like, definitively proven, I guess. But it's the best way of explaining what we see around us. That's how theories work, right? And are we able to demonstrably slam dunk prove that God exists? No, so we have to work at this from the perspective sort of like a theory. I'm not saying that I believe it's a theory. I believe it's real. But when we're talking about how to reason with skeptics and atheists, this is the angle that I like to take with them on. Does that make sense? So what we're going to talk about, and again, I'm showing you some of the stuff that I've shared with atheists and stuff. So again, we're going with a lot of these quotes that other people have brought up. But I'm going to argue here that God's existence, the theory of God's existence, best explains creation. You can remember this with three C's or three M's. It best explains creation, code, or morality, and then thirdly, our consciousness or our mind. So these are three phenomena. We see creation, we see that everybody's got a sense of morality, and we see that everybody's got this cognitive ability. What theory best explains those things? Is it a secular atheistic worldview? Or does the existence of God be like, is that the best operating theory for this phenomena that we see? Do you see the nature of the argument that we're making? Any comments or questions on that? Okay. So let's start talking about each one of these. So creation, this is, by the way, I start with this one. This is the argument that the Bible makes. Do you guys know where Paul would reason and say, like, people should know that there is a God by looking at the things that he created? Where does the Bible say that?
Is it Romans?
Yeah, Romans chapter 1. Go to Romans chapter 1 really quick so we can see how this argument derives from Scripture. And, of course, as science has advanced and stuff, there's other ways that we can make the same argument that Paul makes here. So in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 20, It says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and righteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are out without excuse." So Paul here says, you just look around, and this was before telescopes and microscopes and all these extra, like, really granular kind of amazing things people have been able to see from that perspective. He's saying you should be able to look at the stars, you should be able to look at how ecosystems work, and just acknowledge that there's a God that would have had to make all this. So this is an argument that the scripture makes for the existence of God. Any comments or questions on that verse there, that passage? All right, so then let's start using some quotes from people that, like, skeptics would maybe have some more respect for. So Francis Collins was an atheist who became a believer in the Bible. I don't know what all of his theological convictions are, but he was part of the Human Genome Project in Africa, and he's also Anthony Fauci's right-hand man, which might make you like him less or more, I don't know. But he said this, "When you look from the perspective of a scientist at the universe, it looks as if it knew we were coming. There are 15 constants, the gravitational constant, various constants about the strong and weak nuclear force that have precise values. If any one of those constants were off even by one part in a million, or in some cases by one part in a million million, the universe could not have actually come to the point where we see it. Matter would not have been able to coalesce. There would have been no galaxy, stars, planets, or people." All right, what is the nature of his argument here?
The perfection in creation?
Yeah, like, it seems like the earth is just, like, in a situation to just really house people. And it seems like he says, it was prepared for us. So it was waiting for our arrival. Because could we go to the moon and live there without, like, little huts that people would make that are vacuum sealed? And all? Our bodies are fitted for this environment. And there's all these constants that have to be precise for them to, for us to be able to even have, like, our atoms stay together. And some examples of this, by the way, oxygen levels. So oxygen is 21% of our atmosphere. If it was 25%, there would be spontaneous fires everywhere. If it was 15%, we would suffocate. Another example of this would be the distance from the sun, 93 million miles. If we were closer, we would all burn up. If we were further, we would freeze. So it's like, and these are just two examples of what he would say are these 15 different constants. So the world seems like it was perfectly suited for us, which would, what would be the best explanatory worldview for that? Would atheism, secularism, or would there be a God that seemed to design us and this place for us to be able to live here? That seems to be a better theory for all these constants that have to exist. Does that make sense? All right. Now, what I want to do is I want to show you what an atheist says about that argument. Because we all would say that's a powerful argument. I think it's a very powerful argument. Do you guys know what the atheist would say about that argument?
Is it this multiverse theory?
Yeah, that's the multiverse theory. So Richard Dawkins, hey, how's it going?
I'm taking pictures. I'm not here.
Okay, she's not here. Don't anybody pay attention to her. All right. So Richard Dawkins, he wrote a book, what book does this come from? Yeah, Outgrowing God, this was his newest book. But notice what he says here. The response of many atheists, the response to this world seems really, like, suited for human beings, the response of many atheists is to say that because there are infinite universes, there must be one planet where everything is perfectly aligned. We happen to be that planet. The tuning of G, the gravitational constant, could be all over the dial in different universes. It could be that only a small number of universes have their G tuned to the sweet spot. Only a minority of universes are Goldilocks universes, whose laws and constants happen to be just right for the eventual evolution of life. And of course, here's the anthropic principle again. We have to be in one of that minority of universes. Our very existence determines that our universe has to be a Goldilocks universe. One friendly Goldilocks universe among possibly billions of unfriendly parallel universes. And then he goes on to say, physicists need to do more work on the problem. So he says, in other words, this is a problem for skeptics. But what is the nature of his rebuttal to like what Francis Collins would say? Did you guys understand what he was saying?
We're just the lucky ones.
We're the lucky ones. Yeah. So how many planets are there? Trillions and billions and zillions and whatever. There was bound to eventually be a planet that could do this.
Luck of the draw.
Yeah, Goldilocks. Goldilocks universe, like he says it. Okay, so that's the argument that skeptics will say in response to that. What do you think about that argument?
I don't think even skeptics would like to use that argument because it's very flimsy, very coincidence, contrivance sort of thing. Just from the way I'm reading this, it sounds like even Richard Dawkins isn't particularly happy with this particular.
Yeah, and that's why he says there physicists need to do more work on this problem. But what he's saying is this is the best we got right now to that point. Ben?
It takes way more faith to believe in that.
Yeah, look at how much faith this takes. To believe, like what would the probability be? Like, very, very low. I bring this quote up to show this is the answer that skeptics bring, but people like Richard Dawkins are still not totally satisfied with this answer. They say that this is a problem. When you start bringing up the constants and the gravitational pull and all these things that have to exist for life to even exist here, they acknowledge it's a problem. And this is the best answer they have right now. Any other comments or thoughts on that?
That doesn't make any sense to base. You've got any kind of foundation that you're basing a belief on, that it's luck of the draw.
Yep. And this Alvin Plantinga he's an apologist. He tries to defend the Christian worldview. And in his book, Where the Conflict Really Lies, he takes Richard Dawkins' argument and he has a rebuttal to that. So notice we're looking at what Francis Collins says, what Richard Dawkins would say in response, and now here's another like guy that's defending Christianity, and this is such a cool little story that he makes up for this. He says, imagine that I'm playing poker, and every time I deal, I get four aces and a wild card. The third time this happens, this imaginary person named Tex jumps up, knocks over the table, draws his six gun, and accuses me of cheating. My reply, have you considered the following? Possibly there is in an infinite succession of universes, so that any possible distribution of possible poker hands, there is a universe in which the possibility is realized. We just happen to find ourselves in one where someone like me always deals himself only four aces and wild cards without ever cheating. Tex probably won't be satisfied. This multi-game hypothesis, even if true, is irrelevant. No doubt someone in one of those enormously many poker games deals himself all the aces and a wild card without cheating, but the probability that I, as opposed to someone or other, am honestly dealing in that magnificently self-serving way is very low. It is vastly more likely that I am cheating. How can we blame Tex for opening fire? The fact, if it is a fact, that there are enormously many universes has no bearing on the probability on atheism that this universe is fine-tuned for life. That remains very low. So in other words, he's saying, like, here's a gut check for this worldview. If you're an atheist and somebody keeps dealing himself like the best hand in poker over and over and over again, like, would you be satisfied by saying, well, there's a bunch of different universes where somebody eventually was bound to do this and I happen to be the one that's doing it? No. And what's more complicated, by the way, like, getting the same five cards three times in a row, or the complexity of all the constants that have to exist in our world that we live in to make it all fit together. So you see the nature of the argument there. Do you guys have any thoughts or comments on that one? Were you guys aware that that's what a skeptic would say, that it's the Goldilocks? It's good to be aware of what they would say about that. One thing that I like to bring up with people, I don't have it on the sheet here, but I printed this out, what I'm about to show you, and I put it on my dorm room when I was in college. I put it on my dorm room door just to get people to think about whether or not God exists. Have you guys heard of the Kalam cosmological argument for the existence of God? So it was developed by a Muslim in the 1200s, but Muslims believe in one God. And so if a Muslim is trying to defend the existence of one God, they might have some good things to say that would also be applicable to us. So he came up with this argument, and it goes something like this. The universe, does it exist or does it not exist? It exists. Do you know which worldview says that everything is a dream?
Isn't that Scientology?
It's a solipsism. Here's a funny joke. Are you guys ready for it? I've never met a real solipsist. You get it? It's funny. All right. So not many people are going to deny that the universe exists. So it exists. So here's the two options about the universe. It either had no beginning or it had a beginning. What seems more likely? The universe had no beginning or a beginning? Did you know that before the Enlightenment, most people would have said it didn't have a beginning? It always was the way that it was. But since the Enlightenment, we know that there's really good scientific evidence to show that it had a beginning at some point. So the universe exists, it had a beginning. Now we drop down to another option about its beginning. What caused its beginning? Was it nothing or was it something? Did nothing cause it to happen or did something cause it to happen? Something would have to cause it to happen. You guys haven't seen this argument before? Okay, all right, this is cool. All right, so then we have to ask, well, what was that something? And here's a couple options. Either it was a non-personal agent or it was a personal agent. You guys know what I mean by that?
Personal means it would be someone's will, so to speak.
Yeah, there was somebody that willed it to happen. There was some kind of intelligence that set it in motion.
Non-personal is something random.
Right. Non-personal would be like what scientists, abiogenesis, that something just pops into existence without any kind of intelligent force happening, causing it to happen. And so you just look so far. We believe the universe exists. We believe it had a beginning. We believe that something caused the beginning of it. And it seems more likely to believe that it was some kind of a personal force, ergo God. I like this argument. Any thoughts or comments on that one? Well, it's funny. I've walked through this one with skeptics before. And when they start to see where the argument's going, oh yeah, the universe exists. Yeah, it had a beginning. Was it something? Because I feel like if I keep agreeing, it's going to go in the wrong direction. So they start to fight when we get to this something. I think it was nothing that created it, actually. Or if they accept that it's something, then they dig their heels onto the non-personal sort of thing. So it's kind of a fun exercise to go through with somebody. Any other comments or thoughts on this one?
Well, the contrary to a lot of these arguments, it goes against science law, right?
Yes.
So something can't come of nothing. You know, something has to be there to be, it defeats all law that scientific people have established.
Right.
So that should really make you think, in my opinion.
Right.
So,
yeah. Yeah, so I was the nerd in college that had that printed out on my dorm room door, and I at the top I said, "Does God exist?" with a question mark. Nobody ever asked me about it, but I put it up there anyways. That's the first argument. You look at creation, the best operating theory for creation is that there had to have been a God that made it. So here's the second argument. When you look at the existence of morality, and we already had a whole class on morality, so we're not going to spend much time talking about this one. But how do you account for the human, the universal existence of people having some kind of concern with morality? I like this quote from C.S. Lewis from Mere Christianity. He said, "If there was a controlling power outside the universe, it could not show itself to us as one of the facts inside the universe, no more than the architect of a house could actually be a wall or a staircase or a fireplace in that house. The only way in which we could expect it to show itself would be inside ourselves as an influence or a command trying to get us to behave in a certain way. And that is just what we find inside ourselves." Now, C.S. Lewis is saying, if you want to look for concrete evidence of God, if he's the architect of the world, you see evidence that there was an architect, but you don't see the architect in it. What you would see is, within ourselves, if we're made in God's image, something within ourselves that would point to a God that's communicating to us through some kind of conscience or moral commands of some sort. And he says that we find that within ourselves. But we talked a lot about this beforehand. Let me show you this other quote from Thomas Nagel. This is an atheist. He says, "Nevertheless, I remain convinced that pain is really bad and not just something we hate. I suspect the same is true of most people. On the Darwinian account, this must be regarded as an illusion, perhaps an illusion of objectivity that is itself the product of natural selection because of its contribution to reproductive fitness." What do you guys think he's saying here?
That pain is real.
Pain's real. And how does pain get inflicted? Through immoral actions, right? Stealing, lying, cheating. It can be natural calamities like storms and tsunamis and stuff like that. But oftentimes pain is because somebody harmed somebody else, something like that. And Thomas Nagel is saying, I believe pain is really bad. It's not just something we have a distaste for, but it seems like the immorality that happens against us and the way that it harms us is like a real thing. But if you're a Darwinian evolutionist, what do you have to regard pain as and the way that people might mistreat you?
Necessary,
and even like your reaction to it being somewhat of like an illusion. Like, why do I think that this is good or bad when synapses in my brain are the things that's causing all of these things to happen? I don't really... do you guys see what the nature of the argument is there?
It's a really odd thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that an atheist is saying this, though. So,
Explain it to me again.
Okay, so he's saying here that in the atheistic worldview, if you believe in Darwinian evolution, which this book is attacking Darwinian evolution, and he's an atheist. So one of his big criticisms of Darwinian evolution that doesn't believe in any kind of God, everything like that, is that you've got a Darwinian evolution is a physical process. It's chemicals firing. There's no supernatural anything. There's no God, there's no angel, there's no spirit within you. Everything is chemicals reacting. And so he's saying here, when people are mistreated and there's evil and pain happens in our lives, the Darwinian worldview has to say that that's just synapses firing, that it's just kind of like this thing that was set in motion. But we seem to have real reactions to immorality. And what worldview would best account for that? When he's saying Darwinian evolution can't account for that, if you want to be consistent with it. We're going to look at a quote from Stephen Hawking that's going to explain that better in just a second. But any other comments or questions about the code or the morality thing? Again, we're not spending as much time on this because we spent a whole class on morality before. The simple way of saying all of this is that if there was no God, there wouldn't be objective moral standards. We do have objective moral standards. Even if you're an atheist, people think it's wrong to murder babies for fun. So there must be a moral lawgiver, Ben.
And with that, people would actually be saying, well, all these terrible things that are happening could be good because we're getting better. Like,
yeah, it's onward and upward. Yeah. And if evolution is kind of doing what it's supposed to do, what's wrong really with what Hitler did? You know, like, isn't this... Why would we be appalled at anything when this is nature running its course? Yeah. Anything else about this one? All right. Let's look at the last argument. We'll spend some time talking about this one. So consciousness. And this will help, I think, elucidate some of what we were just saying about that Thomas Nagel quote. So what is consciousness?
Self-awareness,
ability to reason and think about things. One of the biggest debates one of the biggest debates that happens with philosophy is, do we have free will? And one of the reasons for that is, if you don't believe that there's a God that's outside of creation, that everything within us would be like synapses firing. So let me show you a quote from Stephen Hawking that shows this. He says this: do people have free will? If we have free will, where in the evolutionary tree did it develop? Very good question. Do blue, green, algae or bacteria have free will? Or is it their behavior automatic and within the realm of scientific law? Is it only multi-celled organisms that have free will, or only mammals? We might think that a chimpanzee is exercising free will when it chooses to chomp on a banana, or a cat when it rips up your sofa. But what about the round worm called, how do you say that? Some round worm that starts with the letter C. And elegans. A simple creature made of only 959 cells. It is hard to imagine how free will can operate if our behavior is determined by physical law. So it seems that we are no more than a biological machines, and that free will is just an illusion. What's he saying?
That everything that we do is just because we wired.
Yeah. Yeah, so like the algae, or like you think about a chimpanzee having a banana, do you think a chimpanzee like was like, oh, like banana, and then it starts, it's like that banana seems better than that one, or is it all just instincts? And after it eats the banana, is it going, that's like the best one I've ever had? It's all instincts, right? So what about algae that's like growing in a pond? Is it like, you know, I'd really like to be over on that side because there's more lily pads and I feel like it'll be cooler to have more friends to hang out with there. It doesn't think anything like that. And so Stephen Hawking is saying, if we have derived from single-celled organisms and this is what's true about everything else in nature, why would it be different for us? In other words, Stephen Hawking is saying it appears like we have free will, but we don't. The monkeys operate on instincts. Algae grows and does what algae does. That weird worm thing just kind of, it doesn't think about anything. It just does what it does. And so, by extension, if we have come from all of these things, we think we have free will, but we don't. Do you see what he's saying? Obviously, he's wrong, but do you see what he's saying? Okay, any thoughts for clarification, questions that you guys have about this? Because this, I don't want to go through this so quickly that we don't get this, because this is an important angle to know when dealing with a skeptic.
He's trying to directly tie us back to nature.
Yes.
And say that we are the same as.
Yes, we're the same as what we see. We can see algae right. doing what it does.
Right.
We're no different, but we're a higher order of evolution, and so it appears that we're higher, but there's a sense in which we're not. Yeah.
How does this explain like opposing viewpoints? Like he's choosing to write this down, but there are people like us that would choose to oppose that, you know? And so it's like, we have obviously, I mean, I'm not trying to like
yeah.
go ahead and discredit it, but it's like,
that's
obviously we have free will to choose what we believe.
Right. It's all an illusion though.
I know. Yeah.
That's what he would say.
It's all natural.
Right.
But you don't see the chimp or the, you know, algae contradicting itself. You know, in nature. And
right.
So this would be like a new thing that humans are choosing.
Higher order of evolution, yeah. but still an illusion. Is what? Yeah. Now, let me ask this. Do we have free will?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, we ask the question, do we have free will? Is that not free will? Asking the question of, do we have free will?
Right.
Kind of a circular thing.
So is there so do we have free will?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sense in which we don't? If you've got a cold and you have to cough, was that free will? Did you decide to cough? When you have to go to the bathroom, do you decide when you have to go to the bathroom? When you're hungry, do you decide if your stomach it needs to be filled up?
I don't have free will to begin to fly on my own. If I want
right,
to fly,
right.
I gotta get an airplane or I've gotta sprout wings or you know what I mean?
Right.
I can desire to fly, but you know what I'm saying?
Right. Or like, let's say that I'm going to go up to you and I'm going to punch you in the face. What are you going to do?
That's a tough question. It depends.
I mean, like, if somebody's about to strike you and you go like this, did you do that based on free will or was that instinct? When you have to go to the bathroom, is that instinct? When you don't have the freedom to do certain things, like, clearly we don't have unlimited free will, right? And certainly we live in bodies that have like physiological needs like sleep. Like if you try to stay awake for more than 72 hours, your body starts to have the same effects that LSD gives you, and eventually your body will fall asleep against your own will. So do you have free will or not?
We do over many things in life.
Yes. So there's certain things, there's a sense in which there's certain things we don't have free will over, but when it comes to like overriding vices in our life, like sin and bad habits and stuff, there's things within us that might want to commit those things, but God has given us the free will to make moral decisions. And so I would say there's a sense in which Stephen Hawking, there's a sense in which I don't have free will. But you're taking this so far to say that my consciousness to think about things being an illusion, you're taking it way too far. Because clearly, it's just patently obvious that if I'm really hungry and I'm trying to decide if I'm going to have like a cheeseburger or a salad today, I can make the choice. I've got the free will to make the choice of what I'm going to eat. So, any other comments or questions about that? Yeah.
Ben. In some ways, even the things like that we would oppose would be like instincts, you know. So I think like when you look at a kid,
yes,
they're guilty, they lie, they probably, you know, don't want to be a liar, but they did that out of, you know, their instinct, and eventually it's their choice. But it's like, you know, it's our free will to choose not to do that.
Yes, we have the free will to override vices,
right,
as we, yeah.
And when I think of like algae, I mean, algae is going to grow as a result of the environment.
Yeah, yes.
Those kinds of things that it has no control over, but it doesn't think about anything involved in how it grows.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And the, yes.
And so in the same way that there are things we don't have any control over, like our bodies require sleep, and that's the way we're designed, and some things we don't have control over. But there is a plethora of things that we do,
yes,
have free will to make choices about.
Yep.
In our lives, because we're not algae.
Right. And the fact that Stephen Hawking can even say, hey, like, you know how algae can't think? Yeah, we're like that. Has algae ever thought, hey, like, you know how humans can't think? We're kind of like that. Like, even for you to be able to make the observation shows that there's something patently different about you than algae. I mean, I've never seen algae write a book. Stephen Hawking wrote this book, and apparently it's just an illusion that all the right words came in the order that they came into and everything, and that the publishers had it all printed exactly the right way and they bound it up the right way. Apparently that's all just like happened by like these forces within us and no consciousness. Really?
And what would he say to that?
Well, and look at this quote from Alan Schliemann, who actually says some things about what Stephen Hawking said there. So he says this: if our actions are determined by physical laws, in other words, there's no non-material things, there's no free will, it's all physical law, like the algae. If our actions are determined by physical laws, then Hawking's actions are determined too, predetermined, that is. Deterministic forces act on all physical objects, even those as small as neurons in Hawking's brain. Every one of his thoughts, therefore, results from the collision of billions of atoms governed by mechanical forces. And though the interactions might be inconceivably complex, they are nonetheless determined and irrational by his own admission. Hawking is a biological machine, a deterministic box, without free will and a reason to guide his decisions and ideas. What's written in his book, then, was also determined by the complex interaction of physical laws and atoms in his brain. Rational thought didn't produce his ideas and arguments. Deterministic laws did.
That's such a perfect rebuttal. Somebody says to Stephen Hawking, well, he's dead now, but you say to Stephen Hawking, so your book, there was no rationality to it. And in his worldview, he would have to say that that's right. In a book that's making rationalistic arguments. So the question would be, this existence of consciousness that we have, and to the extent that we have free will, all of that, the appearance of it all, what's the best theory on how that exists in us? God. Because if you don't have a God that made us all, then Stephen Hawking is right. We are just chemicals reacting. But unless there was a God that made us and put something within us that's different, the image of God within us, that's the best operating theory on why we can make the choices that we make and why we can reason and be rational and why we are different from the algae, which, by the way, the Bible says that, like, of all the things God made, like, the crowning thing that he made was human beings. So the Bible's worldview says that there's something very different about us. So any thoughts or comments on that? Do you guys see the argument? I don't want to go through this too quickly. I want to make sure that we see what this is saying here. So if there's any kind of clarification or anything that you need, please just bring it up.
I feel like Stephen Hawking was a pretty arrogant guy, and to have this view is pretty demeaning.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's writing it almost as if it doesn't apply to himself.
He was the Goldilocks.
Yeah, he was the Goldilocks human.
I've always wondered if the reasons that Hawking tried so hard to denounce Christianity and some of the RV points was maybe some of the things we've talked about, like reasons for skepticism, like how could a loving God do this to me and my body?
Right. Know, like, have you guys seen the movie about Stephen Hawking? I forget what it's called. It's a
Theory of Everything.
It's a good movie. Like, he's in college and he can walk and everything. And then when he's on the college campus, he starts tripping. And like, there's things about his coordination that he used to be able to walk and he had all his functions totally fine. But then like, he gets married and he's got some kids and his body keeps deteriorating more and more. At the end of the movie, I was just crying because like, my thought was, look at how good God has been to you in the midst of your difficulties. You had a wife that took care of you. You had kids. Like, you had this technology that was able to help you. And in all of this, you're still rejecting God. Any other thoughts, comments on that? He shouldn't have any right to be upset about what happened to him. If, in fact, he did. I don't know if he did or not. In the movie, he did. Like, why would you be upset at what's happening to your body? This is just what was predetermined by the chemical reactions. You should never be upset about anything.
At free will, though.
Right, and that's why one of the questions that we asked in the first class is, do you believe things that you live as if you don't believe? Like, you'll say this, but in your life, you clearly don't demonstrate that you believe this. You'll say we don't have free will, and then your wife asks you, where do you want to eat tonight? Do you want Chinese food or Mexican food? You're like, oh,
No, that's a trick question right there, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It's always Mexican. I have no free will when it comes to that one. But if you're living as if you don't believe the things that you say you believe, your worldview is probably not fitting reality.
Yeah, and you know, you wonder, kind of like what Brittany's talking about with regard to Stephen Hawking in particular. It's like he's the Goldilocks. I mean, that he is above everything that he talks about.
Yes.
So how do people not see him that way?
Right.
That follow that belief.
Yep. Have you guys realized before that if you do not accept that there's a God that made everything and you believe in Darwinian evolution where there is no God that put something unique in human beings, you have to reach the conclusion that we have no free will. Like, that is a necessary conclusion that you have to reach. If you think that there's no non-physical things at work in all of the cosmos.
Because of that inner...
Yeah.
Putting eternity in our hearts.
Right. But there's something different about us. But if you reject the existence of God creating us and you think everything is physical, synapses in your brain, you have to reach the conclusion that we have no free will. Yeah.
How would they explain, like dreams for the future or, like, thoughts of like wanting to improve, like what would they say?
I don't know. That's a good question. I've got a book by Stephen Hawking, like Brief Answers to Questions. I could search through that and see if that's one of the questions they asked him. Because that was the last book I think he wrote, was the Brief Answers to Questions. And I think some of it was like in reaction to this book. So I'll check that out. And if I find anything, I'll get back to you on that. So.
I think it's really interesting, just like walking through this argument, like, a lot of people use this argument when they're in sin and they just want to, like, give up, I guess.
I'm enslaved to the sin.
Yeah,
I can't.
Like, I'm just born this way. I can't help it. And you can't get mad at me because this is just how I am.
Where does this
and
thinking come from?
But, like, people really like to pick and choose with this argument.
Yes.
Because really, if you're going to say, like, oh, I'm just born this way, you should stop improving. In all regards, because you're just like that.
Yeah.
The only course you can take.
That's a good point. Yeah, like, why are you concerned about saying you're born this way when it comes to this, but when it comes to overcoming jealousy or gossip, like, you're concerned about doing those things. Well, if that's the way you are, then that's the way you are. It's the synapses. So that's a good point.
What's even the point of learning anything at all?
Well, they would say it's just the forces at work within you doing it. And like, you can't control it all, but it's just kind of what's emerging from within the things that are firing in your brain.
So are there things, though, that naturally occur that are easier for some of us than are for other things that, you know what I mean, that we are genetically predispositioned to, if you will? So, for example, you know, just whatever. I mean, there are things that some people are better at than other people are better at.
Sure, and some people will say even certain, like, ethnicities have more propensities towards drugs or alcohol or something like that. Isn't that what people say about Irish people or something?
Right. And there's some of those things that you can control, to what Lauren's talking about, with
right.
regard to discipline, free will,
right.
self-control, so on.
But we're also unique, too, based on our chemistry and biology and how God's gifted different people.
Right, with different capabilities
right.
and personalities and the things that impact and develop who we are and what we are, but then the choices
right.
that we ultimately make that goes along with
it. Yeah, and like, yeah.
All of that just makes what Hawking's talking about just crazy.
Right. Yep. And look at this last quote then from Thomas Nagel, again, another atheist. We looked at this before, but after we talked about everything we just talked about, it might make even more sense here. He says, if evolutionary biology is a physical theory, what does he mean by physical theory? What was that?
On this plane of
existence. There's no non-material. There's no God, angels, spirits, nothing. It's all physical. As it is generally taken to be, then it cannot account for the appearance of consciousness and of other phenomena that are not physically reducible, like dreams even. So if mind is a product of biological evolution, if organisms with mental life are not miraculous anomalies but an integral part of nature, then biology cannot be a purely physical science. And again, he's an atheist saying, you guys need to quit saying that evolution explains everything, because you guys can't give answers to these things. So again, the overarching thing that we're doing right here in this class is, if we're operating under the assumption that it's a theory that God exists, does this theory make better sense than the theory of atheism? And it makes better sense to believe that God exists in light of creation, in light of the existence of morality, which would otherwise not exist if there was no moral lawgiver, and then also the consciousness and the free will that we have. Like, the best theory for those things is that God created us and designed us and created this universe for us to live in. Does that make sense? Any other comments or questions about any of this? Each one of these points, the creation, the morality, and the mind, all of those things can have, like, their own book written about them, several books written about them. But I will say, whenever I study these things with skeptics, I try to stay more on the philosophical side than the scientific side, because I'm not a scientist. But if I try to start bringing up scientific arguments, they will jump all over me and try to discredit everything I say. I don't have the credentials to reason scientifically. But we can all reason philosophically, and that's what I try to do when I study with these people. Does that make sense? All right, what time do we have? We've got 2 minutes. If you guys got any final musings or complaints or anything.
Well, I think the one underlying issue with their argument is they spend their entire educational lives and their entire professional lives and whatever trying to, without a doubt, prove their point. But I think, like I mentioned to you last week, like, both sides require a leap of faith at some point.
Right.
And it's at that point, you've got to use the rationalization to figure out which one makes the most sense.
Yes.
And, I mean, I grew up in the church, obviously, and I think we all have the same ideas. But to me, when you look at them apples to apples, the one that's more rational is Christianity.
Yes, and Christianity wins every time.
And stuff like that.
Yep.
So,
okay. Yep. Anything else about it?
Any other view other than Christianity is very self-centered.
Yeah. And you have to save yourself, and it's a works-based thing. And
right.
Yeah. Good. All right. Thanks, guys. So next week we're going to talk about the reliability of Scripture and bring up, like, certain common arguments people bring up about that.